right, we're diving deep today into Nevada v. Rose. It's got all the ingredients for a legal thriller, you know, tragic accident, a murder charge. And then there's this thing called the merger doctrine. I think you're going to want to get to know this one, especially, well, as the narrator for Lex Plug, you got to break this down for all those lawyer and law student listeners, right?
Oh, absolutely. What really gets me about this case is how it shows the limits of the felony murder rule. You know what I mean? Prosecutors can't just use it to get a murder conviction just because someone died during a felony, especially if we're talking about an assault.
So set the scene for us. What went down?
We've got Brian Rose hanging out at a friend's place with his girlfriend, Jackie Watkins. Rose has his semi-automatic pistol with him. At some point, he ends up pointing it kind of in Watkins' direction while she's on the phone.
Whoa, hold on, red flag. What was he thinking?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Tragically, the gun goes off and Watkins is killed. Rose says he thought the gun was unloaded, you know, just messing around, but the prosecution saw it differently. They hit him with a felony murder charge, arguing the death happened during an assault with a deadly weapon. And that for them equals second-degree murder.
So that's where the felony murder rule comes in. But you mentioned this merger doctrine thing.
Yeah.
What's that all about? How does it change things?
Think of the merger doctrine like a shield against being overcharged. Okay. It's basically saying you can't just slap a murder charge on someone just because a death happens during an assault. The assault can't be the underlying felony for a murder conviction if it's so tied up with the act that caused the death. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, I'm following you. Yeah. But give me an example. Help me wrap my head around it.
Sure. Let's say we get into a huge argument. Things escalate. We end up in a fist fight. Tragically, you fall, hit your head, and die. Now, if we go by a strict reading of the felony murder rule, I could be charged with murder. Your death happened during a felony battery. But that doesn't seem right, does it? The battery itself is part of what caused your death, not some separate felony. That's where the merger doctrine kicks in. It protects me from a murder charge when there was no intent to kill.
So in Rose's case, are they saying that even if he was pointing the gun, which, yeah, that could be considered assault, that action's so connected to the shot that it can't be a separate basis for a murder charge?
Exactly. The defense argued that pointing the gun, even if it was a dumb joke, was so fundamentally part of the act that led to the death that it shouldn't be considered a separate felony. If he hadn't pointed the gun, the tragedy wouldn't have happened.
Got it. I see their point. So how did the Nevada Supreme Court deal with this whole merger doctrine debate? Did they agree with the defense?
They did, and it's a big deal. They sided with Rose, and their decision narrowed the scope of the felony murder rule in Nevada.
Wow. Okay, so this isn't just some legal technicality. It has real consequences for how these cases are prosecuted.
Absolutely. It gets even more interesting when you think about intent. Did Rose really mean to shoot Watkins? Was it a reckless but, you know, ultimately harmless prank gone wrong? Or was there some kind of implied malice in what he did?
Now, that is a tough question.
Yeah.
How do you measure intent in a situation like this? You know, when you're dealing with a split-second decision that ends so tragically, it's like, I don't know, trying to untie a knot in the dark.
You nailed it. The court recognized that the evidence about Rose's state of mind was conflicting. Some might say that waving a gun around, even if you think it's unloaded, shows a disregard for human life, and that could be considered implied malice. Others might say it was a horrible accident, and Rose never meant to hurt Watkins.
So the court was essentially saying you can't just assume intent based on the outcome. You have to look at the whole picture, the evidence, the specifics of the situation.
Right, and that's where the jury instructions become super important. The Nevada Supreme Court said the jury in Rose's case wasn't properly instructed on how to decide if the alleged assault was actually assaultive, and that's a problem.
Wait, so the jury didn't have clear directions, like on what questions to ask, what factors to consider when deciding if the assault was separate or just part of the accident?
Exactly. They needed more specific instructions to navigate this complex legal stuff. The court basically said that without clear instructions, Rose didn't get a fair trial, and that's why his conviction was overturned.
That changes everything. So for our listeners, especially those of us who work with the law every day, what are the main takeaways from this case? Why should Nevada v. Rose matter to us?
Well, first of all, it sets a precedent. It clarifies how Nevada courts will handle cases where assault is used as the basis for a felony murder charge. Prosecutors can't just rely on the felony murder rule as a shortcut anymore. They have to be able to prove the underlying felony was independent of the act that caused the death, and they have to prove intent for a murder conviction.
So it raises the bar for prosecutors, forces them to be more strategic and meticulous in their approach.
Exactly. And for defense attorneys, this case is a big win. It gives them a way to challenge the felony murder rule when the underlying felony is assault. especially when there's doubt about the defendant's intent.
Like a legal chess match. Both sides have to think several moves ahead.
That's it. And right in the middle of it all is the jury. They're the ones who have to make sense of all this complex legal stuff and apply it to the facts of the case. That's why clear and accurate jury instructions are so important.
This case really shows how important language is. You know, the precision of how we define and apply these legal doctrines. A slight shift in wording can have a huge impact on a case and, in the end, on people's lives.
Absolutely. It reminds us that the law isn't just about abstract principles. It's about real people, real consequences, and the constant search for justice within a framework of rules and interpretations.
We've covered a lot of ground already. Let's take a closer look at the Nevada Supreme Court's analysis and really break down the key takeaways from this landmark decision.
Absolutely. There are a few points that are worth diving into even deeper. For example, let's dig into one of the Nevada Supreme Court's big concerns. They were worried that if any assault could automatically lead to a felony murder charge, it would make proving intent or malice basically meaningless in a murder case.
I see what you mean. If any death during an assault, no matter if it was an accident or not, is automatically murder, then the intent to kill doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly. And that goes against the whole idea that the punishment should fit the crime. The Nevada Supreme Court was very clear that they didn't want the felony murder rule to become a catch-all for any death that happened during a felony, especially when it comes to crimes that are inherently assaultive.
It's like they're trying to find a balance, right? Acknowledging that the situation is serious, but also making sure the law isn't used to get unfair outcomes.
Right. They're emphasizing that the focus should be on the specifics of the case, the nature of the felony, and importantly, the intent behind the actions. It's not about just using the felony murder rule whenever someone dies. It's about carefully looking at the facts and making sure the punishment actually fits the crime.
Okay, so this has some serious implications for prosecutors in Nevada, right? They can't just count on the felony murder rule to win their case.
Yeah, it's a bit of a wake-up call for them. They have to be a lot more rigorous in how they handle these cases now. They can't just throw a felony murder charge at every case where someone dies during an assault. They have to be able to prove that the underlying felony was separate from the act that caused the death. And they have to be able to show the intent for a murder conviction.
Sounds like this decision is adding a much-needed layer of nuance and scrutiny to the legal process.
You got it. And think about how unfair things could be if we didn't have the murder doctrine. Imagine someone's messing around with a friend, things get a little rough, and accidentally, tragically, the friend dies. Should that person be hit with a murder charge?
No way. That's just wrong. It shows how important the murder doctrine is. It's like a safeguard against these kinds of crazy sentences, especially in cases where there was no intention to kill.
Exactly. The murder doctrine makes sure we're not punishing people for accidents for unintended consequences. It forces the courts to look deeper to consider the intent behind the actions and not just the tragic outcome.
It seems like the Nevada Supreme Court is pushing back against overreach, making sure the law is used for justice and not as a weapon.
You're absolutely right. Speaking of ensuring justice, let's get back to the jury instructions. The court really emphasized this point. They were very clear that the instructions the jury got in Rose's case were not good.
Because they didn't explain the merger doctrine properly.
That's it. They didn't do a good job of explaining the merger doctrine or giving the jury clear directions on how to decide if the alleged assault was actually assaultive. Basically, the jury had to figure out this super complex legal concept on their own.
Wow. That's like sending a jury into a maze without a map. No wonder the court thought Rose didn't get a fair trial. They were basically asked to make this huge decision without the right tools or guidance.
Exactly. And imagine you're on the jury. You're faced with a terrible situation. A young woman is dead. You hear about a gun, an assault. You might feel like you need to find someone guilty to get justice.
But without clear instructions about the merger doctrine, they wouldn't know how to tell the difference between an assaulted felony that's part of the homicide and a separate felony that just happened before death. That's a really important difference, and the jury was basically kept in the dark.
That's why the court was so sure that this mistake with the jury instructions could have messed up the outcome of the case. The jury might have convicted Rose of felony murder without really understanding if the assault was a separate crime or just part of what led to Watkins' death.
So this is about more than just legal technicalities. It's about being fair. It's about making sure the jury has all the information they need to reach a just verdict. It shows how important it is for judges and lawyers to make sure jury instructions are clear, accurate, and cover everything.
It really shows the power of language in the legal system. The way we explain these instructions, the words we choose, can completely change how a jury understands the law and applies it to the case.
This case really makes it clear that law isn't just about knowing the rules, it's about really understanding them, being able to explain them well, and making sure they're used in a fair and just way.
I totally agree. It reminds us that the law is always changing, always evolving, and we need to pay attention, to think things through, and always be willing to question our assumptions.
This case seems like it's especially relevant to you as a narrator for the Lexma Plug podcast. I bet your listeners are wrestling with these very same ideas.
You're right. The Rose case is a perfect example of how abstract legal concepts can have real-world consequences. It's a case that every law student and lawyer should know, because it could change how these kinds of cases are handled in the future.
I'm curious to hear more about how this case could change legal practice. What are some practical things that lawyers and law students should keep in mind?
I think one of the most immediate things we'll see is how plea bargains are worked out and how charges are filed in the first place. Prosecutors might be more hesitant to go for a felony murder charge in cases where the underlying felony is assault, especially if there are questions about intent. You know, they'll have to really look at the evidence and decide if they have a strong enough case to prove murder.
So this case could give defense attorneys more leverage in plea deals, huh? They can use the Rose decision to argue for lesser charges or better terms, especially if the defendant's intent isn't clear.
You got it. And we might even see changes in how judges write jury instructions for these types of cases. They'll have to make sure those instructions clearly explain the merger doctrine and help jurors understand how to tell the difference between an assault that's part of the homicide and one that's a separate, independent felony.
Feels like this case has brought a whole new level of carefulness and scrutiny to the legal process. It's making everyone involved, prosecutors, defense attorneys, judges, think a lot harder about how the felony murder rule is used, especially in assault cases.
Absolutely. And that's a good thing, right? The Rose case reminds us that the law isn't stuck in the past. It changes, it evolves, and it needs to keep up with changing values and how legal ideas are interpreted. We can't just keep using old ways of thinking without considering whether they're still fair.
I think for our listeners, especially those who narrate legal podcasts like you, one of the most interesting things about this case is how it makes us ask some big questions about the whole point of criminal law. Is it about punishment? Is it about deterring crime, rehabilitation? Or is it about finding a balance between all those things while making sure the punishment actually fits what the person did?
You've hit on a really important point. The Rose decision pushes us to have a deeper conversation about those big questions. It makes us look at our assumptions about intent and confront our own biases. It pushes us to strive for a more just legal system. It reminds us that the law isn't just about rules, it's about seeking justice. And sometimes that means we need to reevaluate things, make sure we really understand, and make sure the law is doing what it's supposed to do.
As we finish up our deep dive into Nevada v. Rose, I want to leave our listeners with one last question to think about. Should accidental deaths that happen during a felony automatically be considered murder no matter what the person intended? Or does that approach risk punishing people unfairly for tragic outcomes they didn't mean to cause or couldn't have predicted?
That's a great question to wrestle with, and it really highlights why the Rose case is so important. It forces us to confront these tough ethical and legal questions, and it reminds us that finding justice takes constant work, careful thought, and a willingness to question what we believe.
Well said. This case shows us that the law isn't just a set of rules. It's an ongoing conversation about how we understand justice accountability and what it means to be responsible for our actions.
And as we've seen with the Rose decision, sometimes those conversations lead to important changes in how we understand and use the law.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Nevada v. Rose. We hope this has been insightful and interesting. We encourage you to keep thinking about these issues and to keep talking about the law and how it affects us.